Okie dokes. Hey, everybody.
I can be brown.
Oh, wow. Is this recording? Oh, good. So that's Taylor. Taylor, say what's up.
I could be brown.
Oh, are we doing this? Are we included in on this intro?
You guys are now in the intro for the podcast.
I could be brown.
Oh, my gosh. All right, stop.
I could be sky. I could be hurtful.
This is what I get.
I could be anything you like. I could be brown. I could be blue. I could be violet.
Colleen, please cut all this out. These guys are idiots.
Hey.
Oh, sorry. That was mean. Right? Wow. That was not Midwest nice of me. Should I apologize?
I thought
that
this was the Cripes I Love You podcast.
This is the Cripes
cast. You just spent 20 minutes talking about buttholes and Miles'
Now we can't use it.
Don't you know
whatever.
He's a family? He's a G-rated podcast.
Colleen will cut it up. No, I was talking not about...
All right, let's just start over. All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripes cast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people who are for and or from the Midwest.
Woo!
And, oh, thank you, Miles. This is Miles Montplaisir, aka the You Betcha guy, and then Taylor.
Hey, how you doing there, guys?
Aka
you don't live in the Midwest anymore, so.
Oh yeah, he moved from South Dakota to L.A. to Colorado.
Ooh.
Now that's Taylor. Now, if you're wondering why these two fellas are sitting here on my podcast, it's because I am in Miles's podcast studio. We just did a podcast, Miles. Plug it. We just did your podcast.
You Betcha Radio.
You Betcha Radio. Give it a follow. We just did a fun podcast. It got really weird. Okay. So that's some cross promotion for you. Anyway, on this week's episode of the Cripes Cast. Oh, wait. Did you guys want to say more?
We shot some great videos. It'd
been nice
to come out soon.
It'd been nice to be invited on the Cripes Cast again. Now that we're together, but yeah, no, go ahead. Finish.
You've been on the Cripes Cast twice.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah,
you know,
I'll continue to invite you on my podcast.
We could do a whole Cripes Cast.
Yeah. You go ahead.
But I have a feeling if we were going to do it, the video would have this big "You Betcha" thing. Midwest is best in the background.
That comes down,
and then does it come down?
Yeah, pretty.
Can I get a flag here for the Cripes Cast so when I come, I can just shoot my podcast here?
Honestly, sure. Charlie.
We're in Miles's bunker in North Dakota. So I had a show in Westby. And then from there, I drove up to North Dakota because, you know, it was on the way. It's about 6 hours out of the way, actually. But it's been a lot of fun. We golfed this morning.
You know what's Miles, disappointing Taylor, about the bunker?
What's that?
It's not underground.
It's not underground. Yeah, you call this place a bunker.
Yeah.
What's the address here so people
really
can come visit?
You gotta know someone to see the underground part.
Oh, there is an underground part here. So yeah, Miles built this huge bunker in Fargo.
Above ground.
Above ground, yeah. He misnamed it.
I honestly misunderstood what a bunker was. So. I'll do better next time.
Yeah. Well, the name's plastered on the side.
Building just didn't sound good.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Above ground building just doesn't roll.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have the same pizzazz to it. But Miles has a great shop set up here. There's more merch in the back. I've never felt so inadequate about my merch production than when I walked in here. And I was like, holy smokes.
All those boxes are empty. We just did that to make you feel self-conscious.
Did you? Okay, thank you. Because now I feel better. Thanks for saying that. They're tearing down all the boxes right now. Oh, man. What are we even talking about? Okay, on this week's Cripes Cast, we have two medalists and Olympians from the great state of Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen. We have Kenny Bednarik and we have Molly Seidel. And they are both giving us incredible tips on what it means to be one of the top tier athletes in the world today. Now, they're both runners. And typically when we have athletes on the Cripes Cast, you know, guys, I don't know if you've listened to the Cripes Cast, probably not. But I usually like to flex a little bit, tell them about like when I played like baseball. I was a great catcher in first grade when I was playing football, junior Spartans, third string quarterback, third string punter, second string. Split end.
Wow.
So I usually like to brag about that. I didn't brag to these guys at all because I'm not really a runner. I am a good walker, though, for a little bit, for about a mile. So anyway, that's that. We've got them coming up in just a second. But before that, Colleen has given me so many amazing things to remind all of you about, including follow the Cripes Cast at Cripes. You know, I could have remembered that, right? Plug the Cripes Cast.
Why does she have to remind you to say that?
Because I forget these things, dude.
Are you going to leave all of this in?
Yeah, I'm not cutting out any of this.
Scatter barons over here.
Oh, stop. You know what? It's if you think anyone's got a tough job, it's Colleen who has to cut this Cripes Cast every week. And sometimes I like start going with the intro and then I just have an emotional breakdown in the middle of it. Yeah, I don't know why. Not like an emotional break, but like I can't like read.
The microphone's just my therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez.
How do you feel?
I feel great because this weekend I'm in Des Moines and Omaha, and there are Des Moines is almost sold out. I think there might be one or two tickets left. Omaha, there are a couple, two, three tickets left there. That's actually a huge theater. That's, I don't know. It's
how many seats?
I think it's 1,300.
1,300.
Could be 900, though. I don't really know.
Not to brag.
Anyway, there are some seats available. Also, it is October, or as we call it, Oaptober. You guys get that? You put Ope in Tober, and there's definitely a lot of Ope stuff on Manitowocman.com. Check that out. All the stuff is made in the USA, printed in Wisconsin.
And if you can't spell Manitowoc, you can go to CharlieBarons.com.
Or Kripescast.com. Thanks, Taylor. Got a book coming out, and there's a pre-sale going on, and anyone who buys the book this week and sends me a screenshot, I'm going to pick one person who sends me a screenshot of buying the book to give them a meet and greet package to one of my upcoming shows. Okay, how's that sound?
You wrote a book.
Oh, wow, that sounds fun.
You wrote a book, but you can't read?
I wrote a book, but I can't. I have a hard time reading. And by the way, writing and reading are two different skill sets. Okay,
it's much easier to write than read.
Oh, my gosh. What are we doing? Oh, my gosh. Oh, jeez, Louise, ladies and gentlemen. Holy cripes, all Freddy. Gosh darn it, shoot. Now, listen, I want to thank everybody for rating the podcast and leaving a comment. I want to read one right now. This is from Becky Levick. Levick McMahon. I can't read.
I told you you can't read.
Anyway.
Where's she from?
I'm going to get to that. She's from Krivitz, actually. She says, great podcast. I listened to you on my way home from work, and your jolly good ad inspired me to stop at the Pig and Krivitz. Oh, I almost said something weird. I was going to say, Piggly Wiggly. Shop the pig. But I said pig and Kriv and ended up with shit, you know, something weird. So anyway, she says, I was all set with my Jeez Louise when I saw it. A mountain of jolly good. First taste took me back to my childhood working in the tobacco field. Wow, we always had a cooler of jolly good for break time. We kids had to walk the fields after the adults finished harvesting and pick up all the good leaves that had dropped. That's a great story. Why are you laughing, Miles? This is an amazing story. Wouldn't want them to go to waste. No, that's good tobacco. You know, that could have been your American Spirit cigarette. Not that we're promoting cigarettes on this page, but anyway, that's good money. Anyone else have to do that? She said, anyone else have to do that? Taylor,
no, but
have you
had to do that? I tell you what,
pick up the spare tobacco leaf?
I am so thirsty thinking about that Jolly Good.
Yeah,
man, aren't my mouth is watering.
Yes,
is yours mouth
the pride
watering?
Of Random Lake, Wisconsin. Wow. Miles, you don't have a soda sponsor. You can plug a little Jolly Good. Okay.
Okay. Jolly Good is good.
It's very good. It's very good.
That's good.
Oh my gosh, that's good. Now she continues.
The question is it cold?
It's very cold and very good.
Hey, then unless you know I'm
warm.
On board.
Yeah, yeah. All Miles need is some cold. She continues. Becky continues. When we wind, only one paragraph left. When we wind, how much longer? Dad would say, pert near done. I love it. That's great. I got a kick out of Chris mentioning pert near. That's Chris Voss from the record company. And I'm determined to put it back into my vocab and spread it to the Northwoods. Love the podcast. Tell your folks I says hi. Tell your folks I says hi.
That's your slogan.
No, Becky, tell your folks I says hi. Shut up, Taylor. All right, that is it.
That was Beverly?
Everything. Becky.
Becky.
Becky, don't get the name wrong. Miles.
No. Becky with an I or Becky with a Y?
Y. Yeah.
You're talking about
Becky with a Y.
Says a lot.
Don't diss my comment.
with the Honda?
That was an amazing comment. Okay. All right. Enough of this. Let's get to the podcast. Here is my conversation with Kenny and Molly.
Love you guys.
Things have been crazy, you said?
Yeah. I just got back from England. So it's like just kind of trying to get back in the swing of things here. I didn't really get much downtime after the Olympics, so I'm just exhausted, frankly.
Yeah, what were you doing in England?
So I was racing up in Newcastle, kind of like the north part of the country. I did terribly. It was really bad. It was fun going over, at least. Oh, yeah. It's just hard. Like, trying to gear back up after a marathon, your body just hates you. So,
right.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't going to be great, but it was fun at the very least. Drank some good beer.
That's good. So, yeah, I mean, is that like these, obviously the Olympics, it's like, I'm putting everything into this, but then you have these other races that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Are those like, are you as competitive in those? I mean, are they more for fun? Are they?
No. So how it works, like most, like pro running is kind of weird in that, like, our lives are centered around the Olympics. Like, you train for years for this and you do this long build up, but then at the very least for marathoning, you have the five major marathons in the world. So it's New York, Chicago, Boston, Berlin, London, or I guess six, Tokyo. And so they do those every spring and fall. And so those are like mini Olympics kind of that we gear up for then. And then we also do races in the interim. So half marathons, 5Ks, 10Ks. It just kind of depends where you're at in your season. And normally I would be a little bit more geared up for a race like this, but my body's still not really recovered from the games. So frankly, it was kind of dumb for me to go out and do this, but why not?
You're young.
You only live once.
Yeah. I mean, so was it your athletic spirit that pushed you to do it? Or did you just really want to see the UK and drink some of that English beer?
Well, I mean, part of it is they paid me money to come out.
Okay, so there it is.
That's also okay, part of it. But yeah, no, I actually, I have a lot of friends on the British like team out there. So I wanted to see friends. I've got some friends who live in London. So figured they're paying me to come out. It was a fun race. My coach is also my best friend. He came out with me. So like we used it as kind of a mini vacation to just like see England.
Okay. But there's not like if you go and do a race and like you don't do well, there's not like an ego hit, or is there like you didn't feel like you did what you needed to do? Or is it kind of like I'm getting reps in?
I guess it depends. So for a race like this, it's kind of more like getting in reps, practicing racing at the international level. Yeah. I'll do the New York City Marathon in the fall. And so that's something that I'm like really gearing up for. So it's like, for that kind of stuff, you really want to like go for it. But yeah, I try to keep it just like, obviously there's a lot of expectations now that I've got a medal, but like at the end of the day, I'm just going to kind of do what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I mean, I like the sound of it. It sounds a lot more freeing than perhaps, like if I were to go to a show and if I were to like bomb this show. I'm not saying you bombed this, obviously, but if I didn't do well.
Oh, don't worry, I bombed this.
well, I would be like all like in my head about it for at least, I don't know, a week, you know, and pissed about it and everything. But
yeah,
that shouldn't be the case, you know. I mean, I like, if this is your mentality generally, I like it, but I'd like it for myself. Let me say that.
To get to that point.
Okay.
No, don't worry. I've definitely had races where I like my self-confidence is just like completely decimated after it. But I guess at this point it's like, it's hard because it's like, you have to try and just not tie your like self-worth to your performance, which is really hard when like everything about this sport is just based on performance. So yeah, it just takes a lot of work in that department to not like get too wrapped up in it.
Okay. Yeah. And is that something you see a lot of athletes doing though? Like really, really? And then.
Yeah. Well, it shortens a lot of careers, frankly. Like a lot of people have, frankly, and I used to have this as well, like more when I was in college, racing for like at the NCAA level.
Yeah.
You just tie so much of your self-worth to your racing performance. And it just mentally, it's just like, digger, digger, digger. And I feel like a lot of people leave the sport because of that, that it's just, they lose their enjoyment for it. Whereas like, I don't know, if you kind of stop giving a fuck about like what people think, the sport becomes a lot more enjoyable. And I find like, I do a lot better when I don't put too much pressure on it.
Right. Right. That's just like a great crossover lesson for life of like, you know, you always get into these positions. I know I get into them with work and it's like, I have such a huge problem. Like I'm so anxious about X, Y, or Z. And then it's like, if I go on a walk, I have enough time to think about long enough to find something that I'm even more anxious about. And then all of a sudden, I don't care about this at all. So
it's the bottomless pit of like, self-critical thinking. Don't worry. I feel like that's just such a like relatable thing for regardless of any line of work.
Yeah. So where are you from now?
So I currently live in Flagstaff, Arizona.
First of all, how much of a Midwest question was that? So where are you from now? Wait, where am I from or so where am I now?
So whereabouts you from?
Whereabouts you from now?
So I guess where I am from originally and where I still spend part of the year is Neshota, Wisconsin. So it kind of depends. Generally, it's after big races. So I was just there for a little bit before and after England. My parents live on a lake. And so I try to get out there in the summer as much as possible. And then I actually legit really like going back in the winter. Like, I know it's miserable in Wisconsin in the winter, but like, I don't know. I feel like I just need that like harshness in my life to like remind me that like life can be good sometimes.
I'm telling you, it's just that thing. Like, I lived in LA and there were no seasons and I got depressed. Mm-hmm. And I was like trying to think what that's about, but it's mm-hmm. like nice when you're reminded by these seasons that like mm-hmm. the world continues to go by, and also you get kind of a weird grit, I think.
Well, the thing with like, it's funny because anytime I go to LA to race or to train or whatnot, I get seriously low grade anxiety of too many days of nice weather in a row.
Yes.
So I don't know how you live there. That must be a Midwestern thing, because it's like, if there's not a cloudy day or like just like crappy gray, like sprinkled in there, I start being like, oh God, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, it feels like, I don't know what it feels like. It feels, I don't know. I like clouds. I like, I have agoraphobia of the sky. Is that a thing?
Jeez, I think that I is. Know. I think that's what happens when you grow up in a place where you don't see the sun between like November and April.
Yeah.
That you just kind of need that.
Yeah. So, okay. Anyway, I interrupted you 12 times.
No, just sorry. Trying to I was say like where bounced you're from. Around with that. I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin, Neshota. Now spend most of the year in Flagstaff, Arizona. Now, but still get back.
Hang on. What's Neshota over there by?
So Neshota, it's just off the 94 corridor.
Yeah, you go right up off 94.
Like so like up 4 miles. Say, get off at the Delafield exit. Okay. Just past the Smiley Barn.
Oh, you're past the Smiley Barn. Now they painted that over for a little while. Did you know?
Travesty.
That?
Absolute travesty.
What were they doing? But then they repainted it. So
I'm glad they at least went back, because like we need that in our lives.
Yeah, we do. We
also
need
a good landmark.
I know. It's like, yeah, that would have been, that was it back in like the you know, early 2000s or whatever, like growing up there. I grew up in that area too. And you know, my family would always say, it's just an exit past the Smiley Face Barn. Oh, okay. Got it.
So whereabouts are you from?
Oh, geez. Well, I'm from I'm from the suburbs of Milwaukee.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So like Tosa, or are we talking like Brookfield?
New Berlin is where I was there. I went to Orchard Lane High School or Orchard Lane Grade School for a little bit. And then my mom's mom, so my grandma, but on my mom's side, they were in Elm Grove, and then they moved and they sold their house to my folks. So my mom actually grew up in the house that I grew up in. So it's
one of those deals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, I actually don't think I've said that on this podcast before, but yeah, so now they are currently in Elm Grove, and I spent a lot of my childhood in Elm Grove. But you know, the western suburbs of Milwaukee, essentially. You're the far, far west. Now I guess some would consider them suburbs of Milwaukee as Milwaukee kind of continues to sprawl out. But
well, so I usually, for people like who have no frame of reference in Wisconsin, when they ask where I'm from, I just say that I'm between Milwaukee and Madison, because we are like literally almost like equidistant smack dab between the two.
Are you really? Is it that far out there?
Yeah, just about. Or at the very least, from where I live, it's a little bit quicker to get into Milwaukee. So we would go there a bit more. My dad works in Milwaukee, but then my brother went to Madison. And so I'd be out there all the time.
Yeah. So where'd you go to high school then?
So I went to University Lake. It was just like a real small school in that area. And yeah, I couldn't wait to get out of my town to go to college. And it's since I've grown up that I've like really appreciated like small town Wisconsin.
Isn't it funny? You definitely growing up, I always had that idea that I wanted to leave Wisconsin growing up anyway. And then just because, you know, I wanted to be a musician. So I wanted to like go out to the West Coast or something. And then I got out there and I was like, oh, geez, where are all the deer at out here? They don't have walleye. But you felt that too. You felt that need to just kind of go. Were the kids in high school shitty or something? Or did you?
It was just like, I don't know. Cause that's the thing is like, I've been just like like runner since like I was a kid. Like I love this. I kind of knew from a young age that like this was going to be it. And the problem is like the town was small and like it was just like people didn't really sometimes share that same kind of like drive to do stuff, and I just wasn't like fixing to do like drugs all the time. So
oh, was that the vibe? Yeah. A lot of pot.
That was really the vibe at my school, and like I got nothing against it. Like I like weed just as much as anybody else, but yeah. I was just like, you know what? I kind of have goals of like trying to do stuff. So yeah, I basically just felt like I was a pretty big nerd in high school. I just wanted to get like good grades, get a scholarship, get the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going to end up in California. I was like, I'm going to be independent. I'm going to go to like somewhere on the West Coast. And then I ended up going to Notre Dame. So just spent the next 5 years in Indiana.
Which is like Wisconsin, just not as good. And I hope Indiana doesn't take any offense to that. But, you know, I got to be a Wisconsin state.
Yeah, I take Badgers over Hoosiers any day. Yeah. It is oof. Like Indiana, I can appreciate it, but man, it is like a low rent Wisconsin.
Oh wow.
I can hate on it because I was there.
Yeah, no, I can't hate on it because I've spent some time there, but I'd never lived there. So mm-hmm. you have your inside info on that. Now mm-hmm. Now that you've been all over, though, do you still feel the same way about your hometown?
Yeah, I think more so yeah. Now than when I was in high school.
Really?
It
got worse?
Oh, 100%. No. The opposite, I mean.
Oh, okay. Opposite, like, okay.
More so that I, like, love going home now just yeah. because it's, like, it's so quiet. It's so nice. I love just, like, I can run from our house and just go straight out on country roads and run, like, 20 miles and just, like, straight through cornfields. And like, I appreciate that so much nowadays. And yeah, I don't know. It's fun. I never thought I would end up back in Wisconsin, but like, I could see myself ending up back there, probably more towards Madison. Like our town's a little too quiet for me, but yeah, I very much appreciate just how nice it is.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. And you said you like the winter. Why do you like the winter more or not mind it as much?
Well, no. So we were actually a big like winter sports family. So I grew up skiing. That was like our family's main sport on the mountains of Wisconsin, literally like a hill. It's 30 seconds top to bottom. So we would just race and like run courses on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I love skiing. I love cross country skiing. We're on the lake. So it's like pond hockey. Just go out on the ice. We don't really ice fish a ton, but people around us do. So you just go hang out in the shanties or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's just kind of it's like beautiful in a way, even though it's like kind of brown and gross for a lot of the winter nowadays. Yeah. But I don't know. I just like it. It's a good like self-reflective period.
Yeah, it is. By the way, when you say you, which lake are you talking about?
So I'm on Pine.
You're on Pine Lake.
Yeah, yeah. We're right in like that lake country area. Oh, so it's literally like 15 lakes all like right within the area.
Yeah, no, I know exactly where that is. I hate it when that happens when like I used to fix or put docks in and stuff over there and do some work on a property on Pine Lake.
No way, that's awesome. Did you work for the Mosses? Putting in piers?
No, it wasn't the Mosses. No, it was the Brunkins actually. They had a spot right over there.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Do you know them or no?
I don't think I do. That might have been a little bit before. There's been so many people moving in and out. Like we get a lot of people now like buying houses on the lake from like Chicago. And so it's been like so many new people coming in. It's kind of crazy. So it's funny watching my parents as they get older, becoming like the crotchety old people. I'm like, there's too many new people.
What's the vibe when someone comes in, buys a house, they say they're from Chicago. What's the vibe of the locals? Let everyone know.
Definitely kind of like, oh, they're never good. Cause so like, especially like growing up on a lake, like there's a huge lake community. So it's like, everybody kind of helps out. It's like, you come to like all the different events on the lake, like 4th of July party, Memorial Day, and the head of the lake is like the Commodore. And so they throw a picnic at their house and there's a big tug of war thing that's like legendary every year. But knowing a lot of these people coming in, they don't want anything to do with that. They just want their summer home and then go back down. And so it's always this kind of vibe of like, they're not going to take part in any of the community. They're not going to help out at all. They're not going to help clean up the island, like all that kind of stuff. So it's funny to watch it, but I very much like understand where my parents are coming from, just because like they both grew up on the lake as well. And so it's like, I think they remember it being like such a big community of like, they want that going forward.
Yeah. 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 Well, speaking of community there, actually it's not speaking of that at all. I just want to know if you have to address the Commodore as Commodore.
Oh, or Commodore-S. No, generally, is they get a fancy. No, I don't know if that's like a gender specific term, yeah. But it's funny. You almost kind of do it ironically. Like my dad was Commodore at one point. And so we definitely like kind of gave him a lot of shit for that one. Of like Sir Commodore.
That's great. How do you become the Commodore? What do you have to do? Do you have to bribe someone? How does it work?
I'm sure there's probably a lot of under the table bribery. But no, I think it's just you live. That's the thing. I don't think anybody ever wants to be the Commodore. It's just you live on the lake long enough and you have to like pay your dues. And so it's a 2-year term. And it's always like, it's so funny watching on Labor Day, they always like transition it over to the next person and just watching them hand over this tiny little like Commodore's cannon. It's like a decorative cannon thing. The relief and the weight that is lifted off their shoulders.
With this tiny little, they just hand it off and then the other guy's hands.
Yeah.
Drop
and then they have to deal with all the shit for the next 2 years.
That sounds like a disaster. Well, God bless all those Commodores out there. So that's
in God's work.
Yep. Exactly. What got you into running? Like, I mean, how do you know, you got all these sports to choose from, and more importantly though, and this is the real question, what are you running from?
I'm running from the hellscape that is my own mind. No, I actually, aren't we all? It's funny because like, even since I was a kid, like I just really liked running just all the time. Our house, our neighbor has 150 acres of just like farm, the like woods and stuff up behind our house. So I would just go run on it. Like if I was bored, I was super like, dealt with a lot of like kind of like hyperactivity as a kid and trouble focusing. So I would just like go run up back. And then like got into middle school and just realized that I was actually pretty freaking good at it. Yeah. So joined our church's track team because our school didn't have a track team. The illustrious Wisconsin Catholic grade school track league, where half the people are named Molly. So it's really confusing at the start line. then like our school was so small, we didn't have a track team or cross country team, in high school then. So I kind of started the team at our school and nobody could figure out why the hell I wanted to do this and not just play a normal sport. But yeah, I don't know. I just always have really liked running. I'm just a big freaking nerd.
Now it's one of the more, it can be, and you talked about this with the recovery, it's one of the more painful, sports you can do. Especially at those great distances, is that what else do you do to keep your body in shape for that? You know, is it, do you do yoga? Yeah. Do you do all that sort of stuff?
Oh, Christ. No, it was actually really bad this morning. We ran with a local college team.
Are you
going to
finish your prayer or what? You know, yes. Christ, pray for us.
it's so funny. Like just trying to do like basic mobility and stretches is, oh, it's so ugly. I am the most inflexible person.
Really?
But yeah.
I feel like you would have to be super flexible to put your body through that.
No, it's actually the opposite. It's really funny because like you almost want your muscles to be a little bit like tighter and springier when you're running. So you want to, I guess, be like have basic mobility, but yeah, you don't want to be like ultra flexible by any means. But yeah, I guess in terms of like recovery, truthfully, a lot of it is just sleeping as much as possible. Like when I'm in really heavy training, I take a nap almost every day. Just because you have to, especially when I'm training at altitude, you're just friggin' tired all the time. Mm-hmm. because it's like when I'm in full training, I'm running 130 miles a week. It's just endless.
Wow.
But yeah, I go get PT. I'm trying to think. I feel like I should probably do more recovery stuff.
Well, I mean, don't take my word for it. Okay. I have the worst workout regimen out there in terms of anything. So
Go to the fridge to get a beer.
Yeah, exactly. I go to the fridge. I go out to the garage, get some jerky, you know, some canned tomatoes, bring them back. You know the deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Occasionally I'll go out and get the paper. Okay. And I'll do it fast because it's cold and I will have been too lazy to put my boots on. That's more of a winter sport. You know, we could go on with this. When did you realize that, hey, maybe I can do this professionally?
So I got a scholarship when I was in high school, went to Notre Dame. And I think like that transition from like being a good high schooler in like a very small pool of like Wisconsin running to like going up to college, it's like, okay, we'll see how I transition. And I kind of struggled my first 2 years in college, but then like I hit my stride and ended up winning like a couple NCAA titles. And so at that point it was kind of like, oh, like I can do this like for my job. Like I can go professional in it. So basically I got signed out of college with a professional team and yeah, just started going for it.
Is it annoying talking just in normal conversations and then saying like a cliche, like I hit my stride and then someone being like, hey,
I was like, oh God.
Cause there's so many, like, you know,
with running, there's way too many. It happens way more than I would like.
Yep. Well, okay. So it does happen. Good question answered. How long do you see yourself running?
I'm hoping that I get to do this at least until like my mid 30s or so. I mean, I hope that I get to run for as long as possible. Competitively, generally, like I'm actually pretty young for a marathoner. Most people don't start marathoning professionally until their 30s. I did my first one at 25. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that I've got a couple more Olympic cycles in me. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Like, you can never take anything for granted. And so I'll just ride this wave as long as I can, baby.
Nice. Do you have plans outside of competing on something else that you might want to do? Like,
yeah. So I guess a couple years ago, I thought I was going to have to like retire from the sport. I was just super injured. I got surgery. And so I was kind of like making plans on what to do. So I work pretty closely with a foundation over in Ethiopia that I do stuff with. It's called Girls Gotta Run. Basically like education, run training for girls over there. And then I'm also getting my MBA right now because I just don't want to have any free time, apparently. and yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, I don't know. It's more of a cross that bridge when I come to it. And a lot of opportunities opened up, frankly, after the Olympics. People don't really take you seriously until you've made an Olympic team in this sport. Hmm. So yeah, it definitely helps with my cred of like getting jobs after this.
What kind of things open up with the Olympics?
I guess just in the sense of like before you become an Olympian as a runner, like that's the only question anybody ever asks is like, oh, are you going to the Olympics? And it's so annoying to have to say like, no, I'm working on it. And,
yeah.
Cause people kind of don't see you as like a real professional athlete unless you've done that. Unfortunately, yeah. But then because of that is like, now I can get funding from our sports governing body and just like, it's a lot better thing to have on a resume, I guess. So if I want to go into the running industry, like making shoes or something, or who knows, it's a little bit easy. You can facilitate that a little bit better when you've got like Olympian on your Instagram bio.
Yeah, I got you. Now, are your shoes, by the way, do you have like, you know, do you have like the orthopedic things or do you get them right out of the box like normal?
No, clothes? I just wear them straight out of the box. Yeah.
Straight out of the box.
Nothing fancy, but yeah, they're nice. I run for Puma. So it's basically, they make like a carbon plated shoe. That's like the hot new thing in running is like, you gotta be wearing carbon. So yeah, I freaking love the shoes. It's been great. And now at least I can show that they work. So
yeah. Do they sponsor you outright? Do you, are your other shoes? Oh, that's cool.
So sponsor me outright.
Were you able to get a bunch of other sponsors after the Olympics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I like watch sponsor, just like a couple like little things here and there. Some of it is just like one-offs and whatnot, but yeah, it's been fun. I'm working on getting that cheese sponsorship, Sargento. Yeah.
That'd be cool. Have you put word out there?
So when, cause I was out in Boston living out there for a while, and Cabot Cheese, which is like an East Coast cheese brand, sent me legitimately a 20-pound box full of cheese.
Holy
one God. Time. So yeah, we'll have to see if any of the Wisconsin players come to bat.
I mean, put that out there, you know, so pitch it. I mean, you should talk to, you know, Sargento right now and tell them why they should come to the plate. You know,
I know, just or anybody, Golden Guernsey. I'll take a milk sponsorship. Yeah, even.
Okay. Do you credit your dairy intake as a child in America's Dairyland as part of your fuel as a runner?
I would like to say that these bones are built on corn and milk. So yes, I would say that I owe a lot to just my diet growing up in Wisconsin. A lot of cheese curds.
And cheese curds, good question. Are you a squeaky or deep fried cheese curds kind of gal?
I much prefer squeaky. My brother is all the way deep fried. Mm-hmm. Like in high school, he would drive to Culver's and get the family size fried cheese curds for lunch and come back. But yeah, no, I prefer them squeaky. That's my favorite thing. I literally fly back into the Milwaukee airport and just, I will buy them like in the airport, but I don't know. I feel like gas station, like cheese curds, best ones.
Those are the squeakiest. They're the freshest usually. Sometimes you got to find that one place that's just selling them off. If they're selling them off the street in a cooler off the street, then you know for sure those things are squeaky.
Well, so I've got the hookup. My fourth grade teacher was a dairy farmer. So we would get Kepke Farms. We would get the absolute freshest ones. And then we took like a school trip to like the actual dairy farm. It was great. So I feel like that's like the most Wisconsin thing in me is like, yeah, like my actual fourth grade teacher was a dairy farmer.
That's awesome. Do you have any plans now? It's your folks' place currently over there. Do you have plans on getting a place yourself in Wisconsin when all said and done?
I've thought about it. I think I need to be a little bit more established there. And frankly, it's such a nice setup right now, just being able to go to my parents' place, and my mom just wants us all to live at home until we're 80 years old. So,
what is that about moms?
I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it's that Irish Catholic mom. She never wants us to leave the nest. So, yeah, she's still got my room all exactly how it was when I was like in high school. So, yeah, it's at least for now, I'm just going to keep riding that out at Seidel House, and it's a pretty sweet setup, like on the lake. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. How many kids are in your family?
We've got three. So three it's total. Me, I'm the oldest. And then my brother and sister are 2 years younger than me, and they're twins.
Are they athletes too?
My sister runs. So she's kind of like an amateur elite runner. And then my brother is really into weightlifting and race car driving. So he's cooler than either of us.
The whole family is racing, or trying to drive or run somewhere is what it's
exactly.
Like.
Yeah. Just all trying to be faster than the others.
Yeah. Right. And your brother, the deep fried cheese curd lover, is like, you know, running probably not my thing here.
Well, it's funny though, because he will go for runs, but it like the complete opposite of me. Like I'll do I do long 20-mile runs and whatnot, and you pace yourself throughout. Fritz will go and he'll go straight out the gate from his apartment in Milwaukee. He goes, his route is like down to the Summerfest grounds and around like the art museum, but he'll start out at like 5:30 mile, just like hot out of the gate. Second mile, 6 minute. Third mile, 8 minute pace, done. Like no pacing, just balls to the walls until he dies.
Anytime somebody puts a number in front of their mile, I know that they're at a different level of fitness than I'm ever going to be. So how dare I talk about your brother's ability to run? But based on those cheese curds, I do think he's got a lot more driving in his future anyway. But
yeah.
By the way, you have a pretty big social media following. Are they both on social media as well?
Yeah. So my my sister is trying to be an influencer. Basically, she just hit 10,000 followers. She was very proud of it. She will tell anybody that. My brother has a much more normal approach to social media, that he mostly just is on there for the memes, which is the way that I would prefer to do social media. Unfortunately, now I'm kind of forced into doing it.
Well, because you're basically, I mean, what kind of an influencer does your sister want to be? Like a,
I guess a sports, in, like, cause she has a real job. But because she is a runner, like, she lives in New York now. She's a pretty good runner. And so like, she wants to be able to cultivate that following. And so she's been using my social media to play herself up to get more followers. Yeah. Cause what's the point of having, I don't even know what I've got at this point. What's the point of having all those followers if you can't use it to make everybody else around you have as many followers as possible too?
Well, that's very generous. That's a very Midwest mindset of it.
Share the wealth.
Yeah, right. But do you find yourself seeing like that you have to really nurture that social media following? Is that a big stressor in your life? Like what pictures to post? Do brand deals depend on it? I mean,
so it's a lot of brand deals too. So a lot of our contracts are written up that we have to do a certain amount of posts. And that's the hardest part, is just like, I'm not naturally someone that comes like easily to. I'm not very good with like the pose. So I take a little bit more of like a self-effacing, like comedic approach.
Yeah.
And I also have the opinion that I cannot be embarrassed online if I myself post all the most embarrassing photos myself. So yeah, kind of just going off that. I try to have fun with it though. And I feel like it is a really good way to like connect with people. But yeah, it's, I feel like it's kind of this double-edged sword, because if I let it become like too much of a thing, I can feel my anxiety like raise the longer I'm on it. So I set my screen controls on there, try to limit the amount, get in my required posts, and yeah, have some fun with it along the way.
Instagram sends a pop-up that says you've spent 15 minutes. And then it gives you the option of clicking the button for another 15 minutes.
Oh, I hate
minutes.
That because I always do 15 minutes more. Yeah. Oh, it kills me. I have no self-control.
I had that on my phone for a while. And I never said, oh, okay, now is the time to shut this off. You know, like the phone literally needs to like stop for 30 seconds.
I need my phone to like literally deactivate.
Yeah.
That's probably why I'm notorious for like my phone always being on like 10% battery. And so I need to just keep it there. So it just keeps shutting down on me.
What's your biggest vice?
Oh, probably beer. Like that's the thing. Like I feel like
that doesn't count. Beer is not a vice. Doesn't
go, okay.
Beer is a gift from God.
Okay. Amongst runners, that's the thing though. Everybody looks at me like I'm crazy in the fact that like I drank my entire Olympic marathon build, and people looked at me like I was from like outer space.
So
I'm glad talking to another Wisconsinite that gets it. This is our culture.
Yeah.
This is our culture.
What we got to do. No, but like, you know, in high school, when you go to those carbo cramps, right? And it's pastas, right? And all that sort of stuff, you know, that's beer.
I'd rather have, just like a good, like Capital Brewery Amber. Like,
there you go.
So much better.
Another potential sponsor, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. Ayo. But yeah, I'm trying to think of like other vices that I do. I'm trying to think. I feel like I don't like mostly just like, I feel like I don't have that many hobbies. God, that sounds horrible for me to say.
Whoa. Are you equating vices with hobbies?
I don't know. Cause that's I guess what would you classify a vice as?
A vice? I don't know. Smoking, social media, you know, Barney reruns. I don't know. Actually, that's probably more of a virtue, you know?
Yeah. I think Netflix probably. I do enjoy a good like Netflix binge every once in a while. I'm trying to think of just like fun shit to do. Actually, one of my big vices, because our family is like race car drivers, one of my favorite things to do when I'm really stressed out or just need to go, I just take my car and I will drive way too fast up and down the mountains here in Flag. And I've gotten so many speeding tickets. It's a real problem.
Wow.
But it's so much fun. Like, all I want to do is just like go out and drive way too fast and hit all the corners way too fast.
Wow. Yeah, no, that I would say that's advice. I think we found it.
I'm a real lead foot. It's a big problem. I have to drive to Phoenix tomorrow and I'm just like,
oh, that's
put that police scanner on.
That's a straightaway too, for a large part. I mean, you get down the mountain over there, right? It's kind of just one big street to get there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But so it was fun over, like just after Christmas, my brother and I drove from Wisconsin out to here in Flag, and just like coming across, especially like across Utah, he was hauling. Like we were straight up, we're going like 120 miles an hour. So it's like, yeah, in my defense, it's a family vice. It's a fault for all of us.
Right. No, I mean, you can't help the, what was in the water, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's my genetics.
Yeah. What is your advice to runners who are trying to make this their thing?
It's going to suck for a long time. And eventually one day it'll get a little bit easier and a little bit more enjoyable, but you just got to stick with it. And I know that doesn't sound like the most positive thing, but it's like, I think a lot of people just assume that it gets so much easier when you're better. And you just get faster. It's always hard. And so just kind of, you almost have to embrace the fact that running just sucks.
Yeah.
Do you just enjoy it anyway? Like in general or from running? I mean, yes and yes.
I just wanted to see where you take that.
No, I never quite understood that, like the runner's high. Cause it's like, yeah, I have runs that are like super enjoyable, but I wouldn't equate that to like being high necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say like there are times where like I really enjoy running and you feel really good, but I've never felt like it's not like that kind of thing. I think if people go into running being like, oh yeah, I'm going to hit that runner's high, man, it's going to be trill. Like, no, you're in the wrong sport. Like we all do this because we hate ourselves.
They're just out there chasing the buzz though.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? See, there's a whole joke in here somewhere.
The one thing, running while high is the worst thing in the world. So yeah,
that I could imagine.
Don't do that.
That I could imagine. No, but I was reading this book, Breathe, and it's all about these breathing techniques that a lot of long distance runners have used. But it's basically increasing the carbon dioxide in your brain and so increasing that, decreasing the oxygen, and you get this sort of high, like I think I've talked about it on here before, but there's this Wim Hof breathing technique where it's about like inhaling, exhaling. Then you do that for like 45 seconds and you exhale everything and then hold your breath for like a minute, minute and a half.
This is while you're running?
No.
Okay. This sounds complicated.
Yeah, I know. No, this is just a breathing technique. And the intent part of it is to like increase your lung capacity and all that sort of stuff. So I just didn't know if like as a runner, you focused on your breath as much or if you have breathing techniques.
You kind of do, I guess, in terms of like relaxing yourself so you can get more oxygen in. But I guess I've never like, I haven't really like specifically like manipulated my breathing, especially like for hard stuff. You're kind of just trying to focus on just like getting in air rather than like how many breaths should I take per step? So yeah, I'll check that out though. It's called Breathe.
Breathe method. No. Wim Hof is something separate, but Breathe is the name of the book. But I will say this, in the book, the guy talks about, I forget what runners they are. And if I were better at my job, I would have had them, before I just brought them
notes.
I need notes. I need something. But they said that this runner was able to increase his breath capacity. He's like one of the world champion Olympians or whatever. Don't take my word for it because I clearly don't know what the hell I'm talking about. You got to read the book.
This is the required reading for the podcast. Yeah, now we're giving all the listeners like, okay, you got to go read this.
Go read this and my whole interview will make a lot more sense. I promise. But yeah, so me doing some of the breathing exercises, I felt like kind of high afterwards. I do this one like every day and I kind of have that feeling. So I was just curious if, you know, if you want to add to your I know. I'll send it to you. See what you think if you try it out. But I don't know. I was just trying to get more of those out of you. But apparently it's a lost cause, huh?
Yeah, I see. I don't have any of the fun breathing secrets.
What's the best run you've ever done in your life?
The best run I've ever done in my life?
Just like the most beautiful place you've run, or the place you felt the most alive running.
So a couple years ago, I got really into trail running, and I decided to run the Grand Canyon. And it was legitimately one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's like 48 miles round trip.
Yeah, it's the Grand Canyon.
And I did not realize, because that was my first time to Arizona even. So that was like the first time I ever went to Flagstaff. And so I go in there, and I did not understand how freaking deep the Grand Canyon is. It is a mile deep.
Yeah, it's a big hole. Yeah.
So it takes like 9 miles of descending just to get down there.
Oh,
but,
wow.
So
I'm not thinking that.
Yeah, it's wild. And it's like you keep just going down levels and levels and levels. And it was straight up like it was so hard, but it was so beautiful. And I don't know if I was just like so tired. I was like basically like hallucinating at that point. But I was just like, it was like a religious experience almost. Like it was so cool. It was gorgeous with like the sun rising over the canyon wall. Because we started at like 3 a.m. and then coming back and watching like the sun setting, it was wild. Yeah. So I would say that was probably one of the cooler ones that I've done.
How many breaks do you take in doing that? Or
we took a lot of them. I know people, so there are like crazy trail runners out here in Flag. I'm friends with quite a few of them that will run it in like 6 hours, like just straight through. We were enjoying ourselves. So we like chilled in the creek for a bit. We ate like lunch on the North Rim. So yeah, we took our time with it.
Is someone running with a big backpack?
Yes. So you have to wear backpacks with like water bladders, bunch of food, but we did it in the middle of summer, which is such a bad time to do it. And it's just like, there's no water in the canyon. It's like, it's straight up dangerous. So we were just like 19 years old and just fucking idiots. So, but it was really fun. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't die.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. There's no gas stations down there.
Yeah, exactly. Nowhere to get your fresh cheese curds. Come on.
This has been awesome. Is there anything I didn't ask that you're like, oh, geez, I wish he would have asked me about that. No one ever asked me about that. I've always wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, no, I feel like we covered a lot.
Yes, we did. We did. Well, yeah. Good luck getting your cheese and beer sponsors. Good luck running. I hope your body continues to recover. And you just remember vegetables. And actually, no, I'm just kidding. Just beer. That does your body good. Okay.
Just beer. Beer's all
the healing elixir. Carbs. Yeah. Yep. You got it. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming
Thanks,
on.
Charlie.
Yeah, have a good one.
Yeah, it was great getting to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. And we'll tweet this and everything at you. So
all the Instagrams.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. All right, bye-bye.
Sweet. See ya.
Oh, jeepers cripes, folks. Excuse the interruption, but I just want to tell you about Jolly Good Soda, the pride of Random Lake, Wisconsin, and the sponsor of this podcast, and Miles, you betcha guy likes it too. Announcing, by the way, candle scent tomorrow, Wednesday. No way to get in the mood for your Wisconsin partner than lighten up some sour power that is a scented Jolly Good candle. And I want to thank all of you for voting Jolly Good into the coolest things in Wisconsin. They made it to the top 16. So keep supporting Jolly Good. Go to any of your local grocery stores. And if they don't have that Jolly Good, say, hey there, guys, why are you screwing the pooch in here? Where's the Jolly Good? You know, also, I want to shout out Duluth Trading Company, best gosh darn clothing company around. I'm wearing a Duluth Trading Company flannel right now. Great stuff. They're a company from the Midwest making clothes that change with us like the seasons. Okay. Isn't that deep? They change with us like the seasons. As the seasons change, so is Duluth clothes. So do we.
You got any of their underwear?
I got their undies. Some undies are great. They are so good. They are great.
You talk about seasons, talk about SWAS season in the summer.
Yep. SWAS.
Duluth is SWAS-less. They have the best underwear to avoid that.
Yeah.
Honestly, they hug me just right.
They hug you right, and they are SWAS-less undies. Mm-hmm. So you get after them. People say safety is sexy. I say functionality and comfort is sexy. Okay? Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And I didn't just read that because it was on my notes.
I'm getting a little turned on.
I've never felt sexier than when wearing my Duluth flannel underwear.
Absolutely not. And if you folks want some Duluth Trading Company undies or anything else, flannels or whatnot, head on over to DuluthTrading.com. Okie dokes, back to the Cripes Cast. Where are you at right now?
I'm in Claremont, Florida. So just still training a little bit, and I have one more meet, and then I'm done with my season. I'm going to get a break. Planning on going to Hawaii with my girl and, you know, just relax.
Oh, that'll be cool. Yeah, I bet. I bet. Yeah, it's been a crazy year. What was the Olympics like?
Amazing experience. I mean, as you probably already saw, we had to sleep on those cardboard beds, so those were interesting.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
I mean, I don't really know the whole real situation with that, but I mean, they're okay. I just woke up a little bit stiff here and there, but they were doable. They did the job. Got some sleep here and there. I mean, it was just weird because I did not expect that. You know, with one of the highest events ever in the year, and then, you know, having to sleep on a bed like that is kind of strange. But I mean, it is what it is. But the experience was pretty cool. First Olympics, and I mean, I had a good time. They kind of used the whole village as a bubble since, you know, COVID. So, you know, just kind of walking around the village, it was huge. All the other athletes were there, and, you know, just had a good time, got ready, and went to the track and did what I needed to do.
I feel like you did more than what you needed to do. I mean, that was incredible. And that was a personal best for you as well, was it not?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a personal best. That close to, you know, getting that gold medal, but next time I'll definitely get it.
Okay. So what, like, this, I feel like this is a thing that a lot of people can relate to, though. I mean, you get the silver and everybody's impressed by that, but for you, it's, I mean, obviously, what's the difference between silver and gold for an Olympian?
I mean, gold is life-changing. I mean, you know, silver is obviously something to be proud of, but you know, getting the gold medal, I mean, that, you know, getting gold out of all those athletes that, you know, went there for the same goal and being on top of everybody, you know, it's life changing, you know, opens doors to many, many things for the future. And you can kind of build off that. I mean, I can build off a silver medal and do a lot with that. But, you know, like I said before, gold is life changing, you know, more endorsements, just more everything. You know, just a lot of doors open after getting that gold medal, and I was close, but you know, I got Paris to look forward to, and I'll definitely get the job done. But I mean, me as a competitor, I mean, I hate losing. So, you know, getting silver, like I was happy about it, but I was also kind of like, dang, like I was that close. But you know, I can't really be upset with that because I had a PR, and I mean, ran the fastest I ever did in my life. And, you know, like I said before, getting silver, it's, you know, something to be proud about.
Was it the cardboard bed?
Yeah. Nah. there's just a little things. Like, I'm already fast, but when you're running at this, the highest level, you know, when it comes to sprinting, there's, you know, form, technique, all these little things that you need to work on. And that's what I've been trying to work on all year. And just those little things, they mattered the most in the finals. When I came off the bend, I was leading, I think, and then Andre got me because I tightened up and my execution and technique kind of, you know, went out the window, and then he barely got me. So it's all these little small things that make a big difference between running a personal best and just running, you know, whatever, you know, something fast.
Yeah. So is it something where you go back and you watch the tape over and over, or is it like, no, you know what you did, it's already behind you and you're already correcting?
Oh, I would go back and watch each race. Yeah. Every time I lose, like when I, during the race, every time I lose, I know exactly when and what happened. Mm-hmm. But I always want to, like, I'm a visual learning, so I always want to look at it. So I always go back and look at the races to see exactly, you know, if I was correct or not, see exactly where I messed up in the race. And I mean, even if I have a good race, I always look back just to see what I could do better, like see if I could try to get out of the starts faster or see if I can try to push it a little bit on the last 100-meter stretch. And, you know, I'm always trying to find ways to improve my running because there's a lot. I know there's a lot of things I need to improve on. So, you know, the, you know, running this fast at a young age at 22, you know, there's a lot of room to improve.
Is it frustrating for Olympic athletes that the Olympics are 4 years apart and that you have your shots and then you got 3.5 years really to think about it in some respects? Or does that not really, you have so many events in between that that's not really an issue?
Well, for me, it's not really an issue because I have so many events in between. I mean, like you said before, there's like 4 years, 3 years. I know for some people it might be frustrating, but you know, there's so much more we can do. You know, Olympics is not, you know, everything. You know, it's obviously one of the biggest events of the years, and that's when mostly the whole world is watching. Mm-hmm. But you know, we all have other events that we have after, in between the 4 years. You know, stuff to you know, win money, to get all that stuff. But I'll just make sure, you know, to, you know, do the best I can on the track every day, every meet I go to, make my name known. You know, try to get in the record books, and then when it comes to Olympics, you know, show out. I mean, for some of us, we just need to treat the Olympics like another meet, just not mm-hmm. to put so much pressure on us, because a lot of people, they crack under pressure. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, I try to treat it like another, you know, just another meet, so then I could run, do exactly what I've been doing. Because one of the best things I've been doing this year is being consistent with my times. I ran at least, 10, 15, 200s this entire year. So it's crazy because I haven't ran that much in a single event, but in each race, I ran consistently under 20 seconds. And, you know, that's a good stat to have, because I'm kind of that, you know, consistent, steady Eddie guy.
Yeah.
I'm always in the mix. So another good thing about that is being, you know, consistently at that time means that, you know, when the big show, the curtains, you know, open up, yeah, when it's my time to, you know, show out and all that, I can do that, and I can bring my A game.
What goes into like your daily routine on this? I mean, everybody sees you, you know, get to this place, but is it an everyday thing? Do you take days off? I mean, how does it work?
For me, it's every day. Wake up, you know, first thing I make sure is get enough sleep, 8 to 9 hours, then try to eat properly. I used to be very, like when I was in college and kind of in the beginning of my year, I used to be bad with eating. Didn't really know what to eat, and I would just eat whatever. Like I had in college, I used to have like hot Cheetos and Skittles, you know, a couple hours before our race and stuff
like
that.
Those are good.
But I got rid of all those bad habits. So just to make sure to have, you know, three meals a day. I wake up, eat breakfast, go to practice around 9 o'clock, 9:30. Before we get closer to Olympics and championship times, practice usually is like 9 o'clock to 1:30, 2 o'clock sometimes. And that's, you know, Monday through Friday. And then when we get closer to competing and championships, we have no days off. So I go to practice, you know, through the whole week and weekend. It'd be around 9 o'clock to 12, 11:30. And that's every day. So, you know, just lifting, running. And I mean, that's basically consistent. And then even without that, you know, I have to go get massages, probably around like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. And just always, you know, continue to work on my body, stay healthy, and just make sure that, you know, I'm going to be ready for the next day to, you know, sprint.
Yeah. When you're about to start a race, or leading up to it, actually, how do you get in that mental zone? I mean, it's so quick and you just have to be on. How do you get your mind right?
Before the race, I just follow a routine. Before I even step on the track, I just do a little bit of meditation and stretching, just to get my mind right. And then when I get on the track, if I just get a little bit nervous, I take deep breaths and clench my fist just to make sure I stay in the zone.
Yeah.
And that's basically it.
What does your meditation look like?
I just use the app Headspace.
I've used that. What's your go-to on that one? Which one?
I was using the competition XNBA because, you know, there's no one for like a specific sport. So I just use that, and, you know, just like visual what you want to do for your time. Like, you're not your time, but your goal and all that stuff. Take deep breaths in and out. I do about 10 to 15 minutes, 2 hours before I head to the track.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been very helpful.
But right before, you're not in the meditation zone, you're just in like that fist clenching zone, just like, is it psyching yourself up or still, you know, visualizing at that point?
Visualizing and just making sure to not get, you know, too anxious, and because, you know, don't want to jump the start and, you know, get DQ'd.
Yeah.
But yeah, just you know, clench and try to get myself in the right mindset.
Yeah. And so you're from, you weren't born in Wisconsin, but you kind of were raised in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yeah. Originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma, was there until like 2010. And then we moved up to Rice Lake, Wisconsin. I usually just tell people I'm from Wisconsin because I feel like that's where I spent the most important parts of my life, you know, middle school, high school. So yeah, I usually just say from Wisconsin.
Yeah, Rice Lake, correct?
Yeah, you know, in the country.
Yeah. How'd you like living up there?
It was nice, small area. Like, I think population 8,000. So a very small area, a small school. Everybody knows each other. You know, I've had a lot of support from them, love and support, especially after Olympics. I know they've been kind of going crazy for me.
Yeah, that's cool. And did you think, like, because you were an athlete in high school and you didn't just do this, but you did football as well, correct?
Yeah.
So when did you realize that this was going to be like your sport that you were going to, you know, I mean, go all the way to the Olympics with? Did you decide that at one point, or did this just be the thing that was flowing the most for you?
I would say probably in junior year or sophomore year, that's when I kind of just decided to do track because I knew football. Like, I love football. You know, it's more than just you. It's like a whole team sport. I like the whole vibe and everything. But, you know, track was the safer route. And, I mean, that's what I was doing the best. And so I kind of just went with that because I was excelling at that. And, you know, all I got to do is just make sure to, you know, stay injury free and just run and use the legs. So when I got to college and I opened up in my first meet, in the 400, I ran like a world lead in like December or something like that. And I remember talking to my coach, one of my coaches down at college, and he asked me what I wanted to do for my goals. And I just told him like I wanted to be in the Olympics because we were running the 400 indoors. And I've never ran like a 45-second 400 indoors before. So running that fast as my opener was a complete surprise to me. So then after that, I was kind of like, okay, I can do, you know, starting, you know, this low right now with the times and all that. I felt like, you know, I can definitely go way faster since it was the beginning of the year. And, you know, I felt like the sky was the limit, and definitely, you know, making the Olympics, I thought that was a possibility. So that's when my goal of making the Olympics was kind of there.
And you gave up football. You said is more dangerous. Is that are you talking like head trauma or just physically more dangerous or what?
Physically, because every time like I was playing, like I love to play football, but every time I was playing and like somebody would go try to tackle my legs, I was always be conscious and look out for my legs every single time because I was always thinking about that. So like even when I got double teamed in a tackle or something like that, I just let them take me. I wouldn't really like try to, you know, gain the extra yards because I was always thinking about injury and all that. So
yeah, that's kind of your mind telling you or directing you to what you really want to do anyway, I suppose. What'd you do for fun growing up in Wisconsin?
I played video games, go outside, play basketball, throw the football around 7-on-7, you know, hang out with friends, just all the basic stuff. Just kind of keep it simple guy.
Yeah, right. Any fishing or anything like that? You ever get into that?
I've done a little bit of fishing, but I didn't go out to fish that much. I only done it a few times with several of my friends back up there. But it wasn't really a hobby of mine that I really like doing.
Got you. Did you have any coaches or anything early on that like inspired you or said something that kind of helped when you were in the Olympics or when you're doing your post-Olympic events now?
I mean, I have a bunch of coaches, ex-coaches, my high school coach, Seda, another one, Tebow, and then just college coach. They all had some few words to kind of inspire me, to make sure to get my job done. And I mean, even after another guy named Coach LaRon, I mean, even now, like, I'm kind of tired, because it's been a long season, but I kind of talk to them every now and then just to kind of get some words of advice and to help me keep going to continue the season. So I kind of talk to those guys every now and then to, you know, get some motivation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Like What are the economics of like how your business works? You know, obviously, if you get that gold medal, you get all the sponsorships and all the Wheaties box or whatever. Do they still do that? They still do the Wheaties box thing? I don't even know. Do you eat Wheaties? This is a great question. This should have been my first question. Are you a Wheaties guy?
No, I don't eat Wheaties.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, there goes that endorsement. You know, I'll edit this out just in case. What is the sort of the gold standard endorsement that like the athletes kind of go for?
I mean, I don't really know much about this whole stuff. All this is new to me, so I'm kind of learning as I'm, you know, doing my career right now. Mm-hmm. But like I said, like get that gold medal and try to capitalize off that. Try to get a marketing agent and just, you know, just see what I can get for endorsements. Obviously, it'd be better opportunity getting more endorsements with the gold, but you know, getting a silver, those opportunities are still there. But I don't really know the whole process right now because this is all like new to me and I'm learning as I'm going.
Yeah. So. And but you also keep up on social media and all that sort of stuff. So what role does that play? And I mean, you can see also some athletes who may have not gone and gotten like all the accolades, but they still find, you know, those endorsements by building their social media. Is that part of your like game plan in all this, or is that kind of an afterthought to everything else?
I'm bringing social media kind of as one of the game plans. In the past, I really didn't really do much with my social media, but now I'm trying to get more engaged so I can, you know, get more opportunities with endorsements, all that here and there. So I just started posting a lot more and trying to, like I said before, get more engaged. This is all new to me. So some of this stuff is kind of like, you know, taxing, but you know, it's part of the job and I got to do it. So
dude, it's totally taxing. I like, you know, my whole thing as a comedian before I started doing, you know, I was doing stand-up before doing videos. And then a lot of times it's like, you got to do videos to kind of, you know, get people to do stand-up shows and all that. So, I mean, do you see it as like, I mean, I know you just said it's like part of the thing, you got to do it, but is it a element that you think you could have a lot of fun with at some point, or is right now social media just kind of a burden?
I think I can have some fun with it. When I get bigger, I can do a little bit more and all that stuff. We're trying to come up with more things, more marketing things to use to, you know, put on my page and all that, with the whole Kung Fu Kenny thing.
Yeah.
Well, I know Kendrick Lamar has that, so that might be a problem in the future. But, you know, with that, we're trying to start something up with that and see what, you know, see if I can get some artwork done, post some pictures of that, you know, have me do some poses and stuff like that, and make it more legit too by actually taking some classes. So, you know, I can make it more legit.
Yeah.
Definitely be interested in that too.
Isn't it funny how you can work so hard to like be a great sprinter and all that sort of stuff, a great runner, a great athlete, and then you do the thing where you, you know, tie the band around, and then that's kind of what people pick up on. That's what they know you for to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, putting the headband on. The goal is to have every race I go into, I don't know if you noticed that I've had a different headband on, a different design. So we're trying to have more, you know, we're trying to get more headbands so, you know, I don't run out of them. But yeah, you know, put the headband on and then give the little bow and, you know, you've seen the people love it and all that. It's kind of funny.
That's the merch game right there. So you sell those things?
No, but we're trying to figure out what we can do with that whole, you know, part.
Yeah. What's your favorite part about what you do?
Well, the whole track.
Yeah.
Traveling. Because if I wasn't doing this, I probably would be, you know, stuck in the U.S. not seeing what the world is actually like out there. Mm-hmm. Go on trees. You know, I went to Paris recently, so I had a good time out there. Saw the Eiffel Tower, and it was pretty nice. You know, used to seeing it on TV or in the books, so it was a cool experience to actually, you know, see it live. And it's just one of the things I got to do a lot more often. Sometimes I get a little too focused on like getting ready for the meet that I actually don't give myself time to go out and about. And then the other issue is, you know, some places they don't let us go out. We're stuck in a bubble, so we're not able to actually go out, it's, you know, view the city and all here, all there. But yeah, my favorite part is, you know, traveling and seeing all the different places and seeing different culture.
Yeah, it's tough to, and I travel a little bit for what I do, but if I'm super anxious about like a show that I'm doing in a particular city, I'm kind of like what you're saying, I'm not going out at all. How do you allow yourself to live in the moment while you have these big, tense, you know, events in the back of your head?
I mean, for me, I usually just, I don't know, like during the whole event, I just try to focus on that and then get that done. And then when I have time, like right after, try to make plans just to go out. So, you know, I don't miss certain things that, you know, I wanted to catch here and there before I actually have to go to the next meet. But yeah, like for me, I'm just solely focused on, you know, the event. Make sure I do everything I need to do, because I feel like I don't also have time because I have practice. And then sometimes I don't like have a car with me. It's all buses here and there. So it's not like I can just, you know, okay, go to practice and then go over here right after. Like I have to go straight to the hotel, take a shower, take a bath, massage, like, you know, get all that stuff done. And then by the time I got to go eat, and then I don't know, it's just like you're tired by then. So then it's not like I really don't want to tire myself before the meet. So then I try to stay and just try to recover from the next day and get ready. But then, like I said before, after I'm done with all that, I try to make plans to, you know, go out and see different things and all that.
You said you're coming up on sort of the end of your season. Are you going to be able to kind of relax at that point, or do you feel like there's going to be continued pressure for next year and keeping your body right, even when you're, you know, on vacation in Hawaii? Do you think you're still going to have a lot of this in the back of your head?
Oh no, when I'm done, I'm not going to be thinking about track at all.
Okay,
I'm going to go out to Hawaii, eat whatever I want to eat, you know, sleep however I want to sleep, just, you know, not think about next year at all. I know my coach is already kind of talking about next year, and it's kind of annoying to hear that because it's like I'm not even done yet. But yeah, once I'm done, I'm just gonna check out the whole track and field, and then once it's time to come back, then I'll insert myself right back in.
And how important is that off season? That ability to give your mind and body a rest from what you're putting it through.
It's very important because, I mean, even right now, like I have one more event, but. Like for me, like this is the most I've ever ran in a single season. And like, this is the biggest event. This is the biggest year I've ever had. So having the Olympics, like I had a couple races right after that, but I was kind of like, you know, tired, you know, cause it's like going out there, all the energy, you know, all the stuff that we're giving out there, giving our all and all that, it is taxing. So I really didn't want to run after, but, you know, as part of the job, and I, you know, I got some money to make and I have some goals that I still want to set. So, you know, we got to do that. And, you know, there's always those thoughts where you're kind of like, dang, I want to be done, but you got to still keep going. So, you know, when you're done with all this, like a break is very, very important, because for me, like, it's not even just physically, it's more mentally, because if I didn't have a break, I don't know, like, you know, doing all this hard work all the time, you know, eventually you kind of crack if you don't really have that much time to actually give yourself to breathe.
Right. Yeah. You get that burnout thing and then nothing's working in your favor anyway. So
this vacation, I think I have about 2 months off. I'm going to use every bit of it and, you know, get ready for next year.
Nice. Well, good luck with that. And financially speaking, you have the Olympics. That's where you can make some money. How do the races work from a financial perspective? Is it like if you win, you get a certain amount? Do you get money just for competing? How does that work?
You talk about the races after Olympics?
Yeah.
So basically, you know, for me, like I got a medal, and then you get, several people that are hosting track meets. They're going to want you to come. So they give you like an appearance fee to show up. And then after that, you just get the winnings for, you know, whatever place you get, you know, first place you get this much, second get that much, you know, third, fourth, et cetera. So yeah, it's just, you know, however you place in, like if they really want you, they'll give you a high appearance fee.
Mm-hmm. Got you. What advice would you have for someone who, you know, is thinking of going into who basically wants to do what you do, wants to be at the top level of that? And do you have advice for them when to start? When is it too late to start too?
I mean, first of all, you just got to make sure to, you know, have the right mindset. If you really need to do the work, you know, you got to put everything in, put all your eggs in. And the big part of it is nutrition. If you want to stay healthy and not have your hamstring pulls, you got to have be on your A game with the nutrition part and getting massages and stretching every day, taking Epsom salt baths, maybe ice baths here and there. I hate those, but I take them every now and then. You know, you just gotta, you gotta put 100% dedication and just all that, you know, and it's going to be hard, but if you really want to be able to get to the position, you know, that you want to get at, you just gotta, you gotta do it. I mean, you're not going to really have that much freedom. You know, for me, I used to play video games all the time, but I can't do that now because this is what I gotta do. You know, if I want to just sleep and all that, but then I have to go get a massage, you know, I can't just do that. So you just have to be 100% in. And if you're not going to be successful. Like sleeping and all that, it's important as well because, you know, recovery, making sure to get 8 to 9 hours. Because again, like I'm every day is crazy at work, you know, running fast every day. I don't know, it's hot too. It's just, you know, running your body at the maximum every single day it's just very dangerous, you know, especially if you don't, you know, take care of your body. You got to think of your body as a machine too, like a car. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever fuel you're putting in it is what's going to come out.
When all this is over, what do you see yourself doing? You obviously can't do this forever. What would you do when all this ends?
I don't know yet. I'm trying to figure that out now. I mean, that's the good thing with being young. I'm just trying to, you know, come out being the best to ever do it, you know, being better than Bolt. And then, you know, a lot of doors will open up and, you know, we'll see what happens then. You know, probably have something set up before retirement. But yeah, I have a long ways to actually decide on what I want to do after that.
What is your go-to video game?
I like playing Madden.
Nice.
That's the game I've been playing a lot. Madden, 2K. I watch a little anime, so I play some Dragon Ball Z every now and then. Yeah, I would say Madden 2K.
Okay, could you see yourself when all this is over being a professional gamer? Yes or no?
No.
Haven't you seen those dudes though? They get paid like $1 million a year to play video games professionally. Wouldn't that be somewhat appealing?
I mean, it's nice to see that they're making the money, but it's also crazy. I can't spend that many hours, you know, playing a game. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I just ask because you have the dedication to spend that much actually physically running, you know, and yeah, training and doing all that. So I don't know. Maybe you got it in you, but you seem pretty dead set against not being the path.
No.
Any final advice for anybody who wants to make it to your level?
Just, you know, with hard work, anything is possible. You just got to make sure that you're dedicated and, you know, 100% in, and you know, then you'll be able to reach your dream and your goals. You know, hard work outruns, you know, talent. So
cool. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I hope you have fun in Hawaii and can play some Madden over there as well.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
And that is it for this week's episode of the Cripes Cast. Make sure you follow Kenny at Kung Fu Kenny and Molly at bygolly.molly on Instagram. And also make sure you follow the Cripescast at Cripescast. And if you want to leave a comment or, you know, rate the podcast, that'd be fun too. Thank you to everybody. And thanks to Miles, the You Betcha guy, and Taylor, the Dude Dad guy, for joining me on this podcast and being very polite during the whole time.
Yeah.
And not interrupting me at all.
And also, if you want merchandise, go to
OhYouBetcha.com. Oh, we're not going to cut that out, Colleen, because I said that about 5 times on his podcast. I hope he's not cutting all of them out.
OhYouBetcha.com. We'll see.
Okay. Mandwalkman.com. And DudeDad.com. They're great guys. You're doing the subliminal thing, aren't you?
Swipe up and go to OhYouBetcha.com.
Oh,
keep it in the back.
All right. Mandwalkman.com, Cripescast.
CripesCast.com, CharlieBarons.com, tour tickets, see y'all on tour. Okay, real good. Bye-bye. If anyone needs rhubarb, come to my garage. Okay, bye-bye.
And tell your folks I says hi.
Oh, he got it. He got it. I love it.
So roll out the barrel and get the band ruling.
That's got you down. Just keep her moving.
It's on Wisconsin, the Bears.
It's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle, and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.